is that of Alfred Deakin, our second Prime Minister. Known as Affable Alfred, a new book understands Deakin as an intellectual who played a fundamental role in shaping modern Australia. And I'm joined now by Judith Brett, author of the book The Enigmatic Alfred Deakin, out now in Text Publishing, to discuss the legacy of Australia's second Prime Minister. Thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. So what role did Alfred Deakin play in Federation?
Well, look, two things, I think. One is that Deakin was very determined that Australia would federate, so he stuck with the cause. I mean, it was in the late 1890s, it was pretty up and down. New South Wales was really not very enthusiastic about federation. So it was Deakin's conviction that this was really what had to happen. And Deakin was a great orator. Oratory is a political skill that, you know, we don't hear or see much of anymore, but it was really important in the 19th century before mass media, you know, radio, television and that sort of thing. And at a really crucial point, when it looked like the whole campaign was floundering, he made this speech in Victoria, actually in Bendigo, which really fired up the young men of the Australian Natives Association, which was like a political organisation, to get out and fight for federation. And I think that tipped the balance, that Victoria was very enthusiastic. New South Wales was sort of in and out. So I think it was his determination. But he was also, as a politician, he was a man for consensus. He was a conciliator. He would always compromise to get an outcome, even if it meant losing a bit of, you know, losing some of what you wanted. And I think it was his skills in conciliation which also really got federation over the line.
So why was he so passionate about federation? Why did it matter so much to him?
I think for a number of reasons. One was, and this was quite widely shared, was that if the Australian colonies had been in fighting with Britain over various things. In particular, they wanted to annex islands in the South Pacific or in the Southwest Pacific, like around Vanuatu. That Britain would never take Australia seriously unless it spoke with one voice rather than six voices. I think there was that. So that Australia had a bit of foreign policy clout. I think that was one reason. And I also think, because he believed a nation drew people together, it would appeal to people's idealism, it would transcend the sort of petty parochialisms of being of New South Wales or Victoria or Tasmania. So I think there was that. But also, it was something that he saw as a noble cause and that he wanted to dedicate himself to.
So the first decade of the federal government was very chaotic, with five different prime ministers from four different parties, and Deakin himself was prime minister over three separate terms during the period. How did he handle going back to that oratory, how did that play into sort of how he dealt with this chaoticness?
Yeah, look, that's good, because I think his other really great contribution to Australia is in that first 10 years of the Commonwealth Parliament from 1901 to 1910. There, it wasn't so much his public oratory that was important, but it was his charm and his skills in conciliation, because the parliament was divided really between three parties: his sort of progressive liberals, the New South Wales based more conservative free traders, anti-socialists, and a growing Labor Party, and so no government could ever get a majority. But he was skilled at getting support on side, you know. Because there were independents, and to get the legislation through. And again, he was always prepared to compromise. You know, it wasn't it looks a bit more like our current parliaments, where, you know, the current government hasn't been able to get legislation through the Senate.
Well, maybe it's something we also don't see as much anymore as oratory, is compromise.
Yeah, well, that's right, I think. And I think, you know, he was a very skilled parliamentarian. But he was prepared to compromise, and he wasn't a political warrior. He didn't mind if he lost. You know, he didn't feel like he lost face.
So he didn't take it as a personal failure.
Yeah, that's right. And I think that's something that he can offer to today as an example of a different way of doing politics. Not being angry. He was always courteous. He didn't shout at people. He didn't insult people in the chamber. You know,
it
was quite. And I think Australians would like a bit of that now.
And Judith, turning to his actual policy contributions, two of his most famous or potentially infamous, if you want, policies were the protectionist and White Australia policies.
Yep.
Where did those come from for Alfred Deakin?
Well, look, the White Australia policy was something which pretty well every White Australian supported and every political party supported. So, and it was to restrict the immigration into Australia of non-white people. And that was why, that was basically, everybody agreed with that.
Mm-hmm.
I've just been looking at the debates about the vote. It's interesting, the government he was part of initially wanted to give the vote to Aborigines. So it would have been, you know, like the White Australia would have been something that faced outwards at the
world. Well, yeah, to go from that to White Australia seems like quite a jump.
Yeah, well, but anyway, they couldn't get the legislation through the House. So that was an example of something they had to compromise on.
Uh-huh.
On the tariff protection, that was much more fought over. There was still quite a lot of support for free trade. But it was really to protect Australian jobs. And it was about spreading the wealth, I suppose, that Australia was making out of the export of wool, spreading that more widely, so that, you know, Australia was a very wealthy country at the end of the 19th century. And this forcing, I guess, the wealthy to buy Australian and that created jobs for Australians. So that was something that the Victorians in particular believed in really passionately. New South Wales was much more ambivalent because it had more of an export industry. But in Victoria, after the gold rushes, there was a lot of men who, you know, hadn't found gold and couldn't afford to go back home.
Yeah.
And they needed jobs, and protection was one of the ways of giving them jobs.
So, Judith, one thing that seems interesting is that, you know, White Australia doesn't really have hold on to much of a myth of founding fathers in the same way that, you know, like America in particular, but also I think the UK to some extent kind of do, you know, like the mythical figures of like George Washington. We don't really have that kind of same reverence for, you know, these people who, like, you know, made Federation and so forth. Why do you think that is?
Look, I think there's two reasons. I think the first is that a lot of them spent a lot of their political life in the colonial parliaments. And, you know, people in Victoria don't know much about what happened in New South Wales in the 19th century and vice versa. And in Victoria, when I was writing the book, I'm thinking the only 19th century Victorian that anybody knows anything about is Ned Kelly.
That's
only name that resonates. So I think there's that. And the second reason, I think, is the First World War. The First World War comes along 1914, and it gives Australia a whole new set of heroes.
Right. So it's sort of
John Monash
stepped in for the founding fathers in sort of a foundation myth.
Yeah, I think so. And so, you know, Deakin, it was a process. It was legal. It was electoral. I mean, in a way, it's wonderful that we were a nation that was created by the ballot box, but, you know, rather than created on the battlefield.
Right. So it doesn't have quite the same epic sort of draw as
exactly.
You know.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I do think that the First World War, in a sense, it's like a massive wave that just goes over that, for, you know.
Yeah.
And we get other heroes.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Judith, for joining us this morning to talk a little bit about Alfred Deakin. It's very interesting. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.